This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
12:05 is the time. Ooh, this is fun, isn't it? It's just an hour in which we can forget about the madness that politicians continue to inflict upon the nation and focus instead upon solvable mysteries as opposed to intractable mysteries, unsolvable mysteries, untiable knots. Gordian is an understatement. You describe the knot of Brexit. Thankfully, this hour just veers across all manner of genres. There's picking up magpie-like, a silver milk bottle top from over there, a shiny bit of tinsel from over there, and perhaps a seasonal bauble from just up there. It's your weekly opportunity to achieve the sort of satisfaction not ordinarily available anywhere else on your radio dial. It's supposed to be weekly. Keith, people can hear you in my ear. I know you get very emotional during Mystery Hour. Even more emotional when we abolish or cancel or postpone Mystery Hour. But it's happening! But only with your help. 03456060973 is the number you need. Now, normally, I say quite glibly, if you're new to this programme, but as you heard in the news bulletin there, over 220,000 people are new to this programme since last year. So I will take a moment to explain how it works. And it works thusly. You have a question buried somewhere in your brain to which you know there must be an answer. Okay? 03456060973 is the number you need to ask that question to the massed ranks of radio's most discerning and intelligent listeners. And that's not confined to the United Kingdom. That is true of the entire world. Between 12 and 1 on a Thursday, LBC's listeners are the most informed and engaged of any radio listener anywhere on the planet. And one of them will know the answer to your question. With a prevailing wind and a little bit of luck, the person who knows the answer to your question may be possessed of qualifications so unbelievably appropriate that we elect to award the highest honour that British radio can bestow, a Ray Liotta. If you don't know what that is, I'm going to leave it hanging so that you can have the joy of discovery later in the programme. If you hear somebody else ask a question to which you know the answer is to ring in and provide it. 03456060973. The number remains the same for both. And we have, if you've returned to the fold after a few years in the wilderness, like a prodigal son, we've kind of abandoned the repetition rule because my memory's like Swiss cheese and I can't remember everything we've done on Mystery Hour for the last 10 years or whatever it is. But obviously, really, really obvious questions like, well, I'm not going to say anything because some clown will ring in and ask it. But you would know, if we've been doing this for years, the likelihood of someone having rung in before and asked the question that you're going to ask, just give it a little bit of a think. There is an archive at lbc.co.uk, which you could consult to see whether or not your question has been asked before. But otherwise, the only thing that will see you excluded is dullness. And that's a very subjective position. That is mostly up to Aaron and Ava today, if they think your question is dull. Or, depending on how committed they are to the cause today, if they think I will think that your question is dull, those are the only circumstances in which you would be politely invited to sling your hook. All right, so just accept that invitation politely. 9 minutes after 12 is the time. Should we crack on? Have I forgotten anything? Round of applause? I'll ask you what your qualifications are when you answer the question. It doesn't have to be clever, you know, a PhD in applied physics. Obviously, that would be great if you're asking a question about applied physics, but just equally valid, I saw it on the telly last night, Jane. Just need to establish that you actually do know what it is that you do know. And, of course, crucially, the qualifications you provide, if they strike us as plausible, feasible, kosher, you'll get a Mystery Hour round of applause. God, it's the longest introduction I've done in ages. It's because I've missed it. Len's in Battersea. Len, question or answer?
Good afternoon.
Hello,
James.
Len.
How you doing?
Very well, mate. Question or answer?
First time caller, so be easy with us, please.
I've never had a fight on Mystery Hour, mate. Honestly, this is me being a pussycat for 1 hour every Thursday.
Okay, I mean, I'm asking a question on behalf of my 7-year-old son.
Good.
Who was on the train yesterday, as he's on half term as daddy duty care.
Yes.
As you can imagine.
Okay.
And he asked me quite an interesting question. When we got into the train, he said, "Daddy, why doesn't trains have seatbelts? And I had to pause and think for a moment. And I thought, actually, that's a good question, son. I actually don't know. But what we will do is call Mr. James O'Brien tomorrow, Mr. Yawa, and he will definitely find us the answer.
Well, I mean, you put enormous faith in me there, Len, and I shall do my damnedest. What's your boy called?
Ethan. He's here with me now.
Can I have a quick word with Ethan?
Okay, Ethan.
Hello, James O'Brien.
Hello, Ethan, son of Len. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Where did you go on the train, Ethan? Did you go somewhere nice? Where did you go on the train?
London Bridge.
Oh, fantastic. Did Dad take you to the London Dungeon?
Mm-hmm.
It just gets better and better this half-time. I will try, Ethan. I give you my solemn pledge. I will try to find out for you why there are no seatbelts on trains. Have we got a deal? Have we got a deal?
Yep.
Can I show you my car with you?
Can he what, mate?
Sorry, no.
What did he say?
He has a YouTube channel.
Oh, I love it.
That's where the question derived from.
That's even better. We've been doing
car reviews on his YouTube channel, so he wanted to talk about that.
That's fair enough. What's the channel called?
What's it called, Ethan?
EJ's Car Reviews.
Ethan's Car Reviews.
EJ's Car Reviews.
Did we spend a long time coming up with that title, Dad?
It's just the initial of his first and middle name.
I've got to get you an answer now. We've turned EJ into a miniature radio star. He's already a star of YouTube. Why are there no seatbelts on trains? David is in Hampstead. David, question or answer?
Hi, James. It's a question. I don't know how I can follow that one.
That's so, well, you just need a seven-year-old boy in your back pocket to come on and be really cute and kind on the radio.
give me 7 years.
Yes.
When was the watershed invented, and why is it called the watershed?
I'll take the second bit of the question. The first bit's boring.
Okay.
Why is it called the watershed? Is a watershed not the point at which something starts shedding water? So the water rises and rises and rises, then it reaches the watershed, and the water will be shed. It's pretty self-explanatory, but no. I don't know what it is. Is it a canal, or is it on a boat, or is it... So it's a good question. I like it.
But why is it relevant to television, radio, etc.?
Because it was a name that conveyed after this point, everything changes. So you're not allowed to continue past the watershed. I think we might. No, I'm thinking out loud. No, don't worry. I'm not going to claim a round of applause for these meanderings. I'm just getting my ducks in a row. I bet there is a kind of...
There'll be something clever.
An answer to... Yeah, I hope so. I like the question. I can't believe we've never done it before.
Let's
see if we can get you an answer. Seatbelts on trains, why are there not any? And what's the origin of the word watershed in the context of TV? I don't think there is a watershed on the radio, actually. I don't think that list Ava read me the other day when we were interviewing James Felton, author of 52 Times Britain Was a Bleep, and she read me the list of all the words that are on the same category as bleep. No, I'm still a little bit shaky after that experience. But I don't think it's any different for Nick Abbott than it is for me or for Steve at stupid o'clock in the morning. It is 12:14. Steve is in, not that Steve, this Steve, is in Oxford. Question or answer, Steve?
Hello, James. Nice to talk to you again. Question, please.
Carry on.
Given that food is measured in weight and fluid is measured by volume,
is it?
Is ketchup a food or drink?
Food.
Because so why has it got the volume on the back of the bottle?
Well, no, but you've set your own parameters. If your parameters are correct, then you've answered your own question. So either you've got a question or you've got a statement. You've made a statement.
No, you didn't let me finish my statement.
All right, that sounds very likely, actually, even on Mystery Hour. Go on.
It's got both the weight and the volume on the back.
Right.
So is it a food or a drink?
It's a food.
Because it seems like one confused condiment to me.
Confused condiment works. That was the name of my last band. But the bottom line is, it's about viscosity, really, isn't it? Rather than anything else.
Don't know. You're educating me on the source now.
It is. It must be about. Because so, what is a moose? A moose is a food. You wouldn't quibble about a moose being a food, would you? No, I mean a moose in a little pot, not the thing with antlers, obviously. A chocolate
You're saying
mousse.
It's food, even though it's got the measurement in volume as well as in weight.
I wonder if there's a definition which would involve water content. No, it can't be water content.
No, it's got a... Which is it? It can't
viscosity.
Just be a food.
It's viscosity. It's a food.
Your pasty is measured by weight. and your milk's measured by volume.
Yeah.
Ketchup's got both.
Yeah.
So which is it?
A food.
Well, okay.
All right, I don't know how we can settle this. All right, I'll pour you a pint of ketchup, and I'll put some for you, and then I'll have some on my plate next to my chips to eat, and we can decide who's most looking forward to it. You drinking a pint of ketchup or me dipping my chips in it? Food or drink? Drink or food?
I think it'd be easier to get through the ketchup with a spoon than it would water.
But you don't drink with a spoon. is soup a food or a drink?
That's a food. Because it's measured in weight.
Oh, there you go. You've answered your own question. I'll leave it on the board. See if someone can go definitive. Perhaps the inventor of ketchup. But I think it's obviously a food, isn't it? Sort of conversation you usually have at 3 o'clock in the morning while your mate's out at the 24-hour garage buying Turkish Delight. It's 12:16.
This is LBC. This is LBC Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 12:19. Yes, well done. I'm more observant among you, or rather longer-term listeners. You're absolutely right. I am particularly delighted to have welcomed one of our new advertisers onto the programme today. 12:19 is the time. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour continues, your weekly opportunity to get answers to the most vexing of questions. I tell you what, old EJ, you picked up a few fans already there, mate. That's some quality broadcasting there. How old is he? 7 and 47, so he's be 8, 12. Yeah, I'm all right. He's not going to be after my job anytime soon. 20 minutes after 12. Why are there no seatbelts on trains? That's what EJ wants to know. Why is a watershed called a watershed? I know we've danced around this question many times, but why is it called a watershed? I don't know. I don't think we have done that precise question. Is ketchup a food or a drink? It's a magnificent short story about a guy. Oh, I wish I could remember who wrote it. New York started. Well, it might have been San Francisco. Something around the Lawrence Ferlinghetti City Lights bookshop crew, I think. About an eccentric guy who used to live on free ketchup when he was on his uppers. I can't remember whether he was homeless or not, but he became something of a kind of figure in that subculture. I think
the way things are isn't the way they have to be.
But knowing what to challenge and how to change it isn't always clear.
That's why independent journalism has never mattered more.
When we are free to follow any lead
and question any authority,
we can confront the status quo,
uncover vital alternatives,
and bring clarity to the world's most complex issues.
We can help our readers understand the world.
So together we can fight for a better one. Hope is power.
And with your support,
you'll always find it
at The Guardian.
It was San Francisco, but I may be wrong. There's a short, someone listening, one person listening to this programme would have just gone, oh yeah, of course, you mean The Mysterious Ketchup Man of 7th Avenue by Truman Capote. But it's not me. I don't know. 21 after 12 is the time. Neil's in Stevenage. Neil, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
If a venomous snake accidentally bit itself, would it die?
No.
Right.
Antibodies.
You sure?
It's got antibodies.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds unlikely. Doesn't it?
Well, I've just wondered.
I wonder now as well, but it just seems a ridiculous design fault. Evolution should have ironed out that kind of wrinkle moons ago, shouldn't it?
Well, no, if a human bites another human, it sometimes goes septic, doesn't it? So...
Yeah, but that's not venom. That's nothing to do with venom. Venom has an antidote, doesn't it? So I presume that the antidote comes from the snake in some way, probably. Well, I'm not going to get a round of applause for this. We need someone from the reptile house at Dudley Zoo, don't we? I love the way you said venomous snake. I don't know why. It had a certain ring to it. It had a nice sort of, almost like a growl buzzing underneath.
I've been practicing it.
You put your teeth in before you rang, did you, Neil? I'm very grateful for you to that. That's very nice, very thoughtful of you. I like that question. The kids will like it as well. I forgot it was half time. That venomous snake. If a venomous snake were to bite itself, would it die? Norman is in Epsom. Norman, qualification. No, I mean question or answer.
Answer, James.
Carry on.
So for the ketchup question, I don't think it matters whether it's food or a drink.
But that was the question, though.
Yeah, so...
Of course it matters.
Well, not really.
Go on.
You're dispensing a liquid into a container with a fixed volume.
Yes.
It's easier to control the dispensing of that liquid into a container by volume than by measuring its weight. So my soy sauce container on my table is measured in... milliliters.
Yes.
And so too is the hot sauce.
Yes.
And so
what brand of hot sauce have you got?
Oh, here. Oh, it's a well-known supermarket brand.
Oh, is it own brand? You've gone for the own brand. I'm using.
For the own brand.
I've forgotten the name of the one I'm using at the moment. Something like Econium.
You probably have Kickerman.
No. That's soya sauce. That's not hot sauce.
That's soy sauce.
Yeah, no. Yeah, well, the hot sauce. I've been using Econi or something, EC, I can't remember what it's called.
Econa,
that is a strong sauce. Is that what it's called?
It's a strong sauce, Econa, yeah.
Yeah, very nice. Carry on. Sorry, where were we? But anyway, you're not telling us whether ketchup is a sauce or a food, you're just giving us a lecture on containers. Encona with an N, E-N-C-O-N-A.
Encona, yeah. So it doesn't matter in terms of how you dispense it and measure the weight.
Yeah, but it matters to the person who asked the question, Norman.
Well, it's a food, it's not a liquid, it's not a drink.
Qualifications?
I'm a scientist. I'm not a food scientist, but I'm a chemist.
Yeah. Okay. Qualification, scientist. Boom. And you didn't actually study during your PhD whether or not ketchup is a liquid or a food.
No, I studied molecular beam scattering, reaction dynamics.
Yeah, I thought so. I could tell from your sort of general attitude.
Thanks, James.
No, you're welcome. I'm going to give you a round of applause because you're a very clever man. And because you kind of maybe... It's reminded me of how much I enjoy hot sauce. But you're not taking the question off the board because we need to know what is the definitive measure by which viscosity moves from liquid to food, if there is one. It would be viscosity, wouldn't it?
Well, viscosity controls the flow and how easy it flows through.
So the point at which it becomes food will have something to do with its viscosity because mousse is food, soup is food. Oh, but soup can be as watery as water, can't it?
Well, is ice cream food?
Yes. Is melted ice cream food or drink? Maybe there is no definition. That's why I'm giving you a round of applause, in case there is no definition, all right?
Yeah, so ice cream is also measured by volume. So they put lots of air in the ice cream to fill up the volume.
Yeah, but you're doing it again. You're doing it again with your chemistry. You're just adding information that's irrelevant but interesting.
Okay, sorry, Joe.
Round of applause for Norman. Dr. Norman, actually. Round of applause for Dr. Norman. 25 minutes after 12 is the time. Pat's in Godalming. Pat, question or answer?
It's an answer. It's about the snake.
The venomous snake.
A venomous snake will indeed poison itself if it bites itself.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yep.
No.
Still yes.
Qualifications?
The qualifications are that I bought my young daughter, a book last week, which was The Theory of Everything.
Oh, yes.
And that was the very first thing that came out of it.
What? If a snake bites itself, will it bite? Do we know how often it happens?
It never mentioned that. It's just one of these books that sort of, it's all the weird and wonderful facts.
Like it. I think we give you a round of applause.
But thank you very much, sir.
You're very welcome. Make sure you share it with your daughter. Because it was her book. 26 minutes after 12. Georgina is in Coventry. Georgina, question or answer?
Oh, it's a question, James.
Excellent. Carry on.
So, very often I go on Flight Tracker and I see all the aeroplanes in the sky.
Mm.
And there's hundreds and hundreds of them. And then if you look at a satellite photograph, you never ever see an aeroplane. And I wondered why.
Is that true? You mean, well... Photograph taken by a satellite?
Yeah, when you look at all the pictures of Earth, and there's literally no aeroplanes there, and I've just wondered why.
Keith is shaking his head, I'm not sure why. He clearly thinks this is a rubbish question, but I'm intrigued.
Well, I'm intrigued as well, because a friend of mine bought me a lovely gift.
Yes.
Of pictures of Earth from the sky.
Oh, sounds nice.
And there were no aeroplanes.
No. Well, that's not proof that it never happens, because for a book called Pictures of Earth from the Sky, they would have chosen the pictures with no planes in them, Georgina, wouldn't they?
Oh, right. But aren't there aeroplanes?
Well, I presume there. I think we might be edging our way. I think we might be groping our way towards an answer here, because I presume there are pictures... Well, you can see aeroplanes, but they're rarely selected for publication in books called Pictures of Earth from the Sky, brackets, with no aeroplanes, close brackets.
Okay.
But I'll find out.
Okay, so I'd appreciate it.
I'll do my best. The question is it true? But that's the unspoken premise of the question. Mark's in Chingford. Mark, question or answer?
Yeah, hi, James. I've got a question.
Fantastic.
A few years ago, I was playing around with one of those flight simulators on the computer.
Oh, yes.
and I managed to do a perfect loop-the-loop in a Boeing 747 without crashing or anything.
Well done.
And I was wondering if any pilots are listening and whether they could say if that was actually physically possible or not.
How good was your simulator? Was it like a top-of-the-range one?
It was the Microsoft flight simulator.
So it should have been... The physics of it should have been... fairly strong. It'd be the stress, wouldn't it? I've done the loop-the-loop, believe it or not, on a small plane, and when the G-force kicks in, you wouldn't have got this doing it in your bedroom on your computer. The G-force kicks in, it's like you've got weights attached to your face. You know, the skin starts. So that stress must be exerted on the plane. I would imagine if the answer is no, it will be because the wings would snap off. It wouldn't be because of gravity or the laws of physics in that sense. It would be simply because of the stress placed on the chassis and the wings would be so great because of the G-force. Don't ask me why. So that's what we need to know. If you tried to do a loop-the-loop in a Boeing 747, would the wings snap off?
Yeah, basically.
I like it. It's a good question. Yeah. You're on. Let's see what we can do. 12:29 is the time. 0345 606 0973 is the number. We need to know why there are no seatbelts on trains. Oh, that's for Ethan. 0345 606 0973. Why is the TV watershed called a watershed? Where does the actual word watershed come from? Is ketchup a drink or a food? It's obviously a food, but can we prove it? Can we go definitive? Why do you never see any aeroplanes in photographs taken by satellites? And can a Boeing 747 or a jumbo jet? Should we say any jumbo jet? Can a jumbo jet loop the loop? 0345 606 0973 is the number you need if you can answer any of those, or indeed if you have a question of your own that is begging for resolution. Thomas Watts is here now with your headlines.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
It's 12:34. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where the mysteries continue to be solved and indeed posed. If you can answer any of the questions you've already asked, or if you have a question of your own, the number remains the same. And I'll tell you what it is when I've got some phone lines free. Jez is in Camberley. Jez, question or answer?
Hello, James.
Hello, Jez.
It's an answer about the looping-the-looping, the 747.
Marvellous.
Or equivalent.
Take it away, Jez.
There's a number of reasons why, in reality, you can't. I'm happy to go through them in one by one.
Please.
The first is the way a commercial jet wing works. It's an asymmetrical aerofoil. So,
well, of course.
It generates lift by air moving faster over the top of the wind than it does underneath, which produces low pressure, which gives the aircraft lift. Now, because Boeing designed those aircraft to work efficiently flying normally, the way the wing works is it has a lower angle of attack because the wing is significantly shaped such that it is efficient and gives lift when flying the right way up. If you tried to fly it upside down, you'd have to have such an angle attack to counteract the wing design that it wouldn't work.
Got it.
The other issue is weight versus power. Simply, a jet like the 747, when you try to go through 90 degrees, the amount of power needed to overcome the stall speed of the wing, it doesn't have.
Got it.
That's not to say you couldn't make a 747 that looped the loop, but it would be totally useless for all the other applications.
Soup it up.
Yeah. So when you've gone upside down in a plane, or where you see the stunt aircraft that do the Red Bull Air Race and that sort of thing, what they have is a symmetrical aerofoil on the wing. So the pilot has to create angle of attack by keeping the nose up. So when he inverts, he simply pushes the nose or up still, but down. So the wing, the pilot is determining the angle of attack. It's not preset into the wing. Therefore, we can fly upside down and all sorts of clever things.
Final, brilliant answer. Round of applause in the bag. Qualifications, air traffic controller or pilot?
Air traffic controller who has studied the theory of flight and a general aviation geek.
Oh, there you go. So, final question. If I tried to do it in a commercially normal jet, what would happen? Would I stall or would the wings fall off?
If you somehow had enough power and took enough weight out of the aircraft to get above the stall point, to get it over the 90 degrees, you'd probably find that the structure would start to give up because the wings would be experiencing load in a way they weren't designed.
So the answer is both. The wings would fall off at point Y, but at point X, you'd probably stall.
Yeah, you'd likely to fall out of the sky and smash into the ground tail first. It could be unrecoverable.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night, and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes?
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
Mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
And on that happy note, a round of applause for Jess.
Thank you.
Thank you. On a serious note, because I know it's half term and there will be children listening, do not try to do a loop-the-loop in a Boeing 747, all right? Thank you. David is in Oxford. David, question or answer?
Answer.
Carry on.
The one about imaging, satellite imaging without any aeroplanes in it?
Yes.
First of all, you do see satellite images of aeroplanes. There's actually a website where loads of them have been captured and people have had not enough to do for so long that they've been through Google Maps and found loads of pictures of aeroplanes in flight.
It is quite funny. Georgina was so nice. And I realised when she told me that it was her book that had led her to believe that you never see these. But who's going to publish a book of satellite photographs full of accidental snaps of aeroplanes?
Yeah.
Bless her.
Well, the other thing is there's a massive misconception about when you click on the little box in Google Maps that says satellite, not all the pictures you're going to see are taken from satellites.
Oh.
Because as you zoom in, effectively you're looking from closer above the surface of the planet.
Those
pictures go from being satellite images to being aerial photographs taken from aeroplanes.
And those ones, of course, yes,
will not have aeroplanes in them because they're below the regular airline.
And do you know, Julia has sent me, it's a link to a Daily Mail article, so I may not retweet it, I probably will. A photograph taken from the International Space Centre in which you can, the trick is to find it. Can you see, I think I've spotted the aeroplane in this picture, but you could, I mean, there's bound to be, it's against all the laws of nature that you could take a picture from a great height and not see an aeroplane.
Yeah, there are thousands, ever. Obviously.
Thousands of them.
Yeah.
Round, so qualifications?
Playing with GPS professionally for 10 years and doing a lot of stuff with aerial photographs and imaging in commercial projects.
Round of applause for David.
Thank you.
No, thank you. Solved the catch-up question as well. Well, I say I've solved it, but I think that between them, Simon and Mitch on Twitter have solved it, but I'm not allowed to read out tweets. Do you know, big shocks today. Everyone, because I tweeted thank you to my team after our pleasant news this morning. People thought Keith was not real. Did you know that? Because he's quite an old-fashioned name and he's quite a cool young dude. So maybe it just, I don't know. Why was that? People didn't believe that Keith was real. A lot of people commenting on that. Matt Beaumont feels awful now. He says, I assumed Keith wasn't real. I feel awful now. I told you. Hugo is in Manchester. Question or answer, Hugo?
It's an answer. It's a train and seatbelts.
Excellent.
It's a two-part answer there. The first is to do with physics.
Yes.
Trains are so large and so heavy and have an awful lot of momentum, so they tend not to rapidly decelerate.
Terrible phone line. I don't know whether you got on a train after talking to me, or rather after getting put through. We'll try and fix that. We'll definitely be back. Or will we, though? Because Joe's in Surbiton. Question or answer, Joe?
It's an answer. It's to the same question.
Oh, this is cruel. This is cruel, man. You want to go through with this? The poor fella's been waiting. He's on hold. No, we're going to... Okay, Joe, you're here, mate. The moral of the story is, after you've spoken to Aaron or Ava, do not move, climb ladders, change room, or in any way compromise the possible strength of your phone signal. Because you could end up getting gazumped by Joe. Over to you, Joe.
Well, I had this conversation once with my cousin who works for the Rail Safety Standards Board, who I think researched it.
Okay.
He said that they don't have seatbelts on trains because you get more injuries in an accident than you would if you didn't have seatbelts.
Mm-hmm.
So like 8 times more people would be injured or something like that.
Makes sense.
And it's because the train will deform, and if people are strapped into a seat, they won't be able to move.
Yes.
So that's one reason. And the other reason is they would have to strengthen the seats. And then all the people that are standing up and aren't belted in would hit stronger seats and they would get more injured.
That's pretty strong. I mean, I feel sorry for the other fella. If he wants to add something to that, then we will allow him to. But you're quite, and also excellent qualifications. My cousin works for the Rail Safety Standards Board, or whatever it's called. Round of applause for Joe. Makes sense, actually, when you think about it. 0345 60 60 973 is the number that you need if you can answer it. We need a couple more questions. It's very aeronautic flavour today. Have you noticed? Martin's in Cornwall. Martin, question or answer?
Hello, James. Yeah, first time caller. A little bit nervous, obviously.
It's only me.
I'm fairly low hour, but I'm a PBL pilot with an aerobatics certificate.
Oh, okay.
And I'm just, it's sort of more of a steward's inquiry. Your guy who spoke as a air traffic controller has got it completely wrong.
Well, steady, mate. We're all friends here, right? It's not like we're discussing Brexit. We're just discussing doing the loop in a jumbo jet. And he did sound as if he knew his stuff.
All right, fair enough. I fly Cessna 152s, which are probably the most underpowered aerobatic aeroplane you could get your hands on.
Yeah, but they're very light.
They're very light, but their engine's only 100 horsepower.
Yeah, but
the
jumbo jet
like
is very heavy. He did refer not just to power, but also to weight of plane.
Yeah, but power to weight is the same. If you've got 150 horsepower engine in the same weight aeroplane, you're going to get more power. So anyway, Cessna 152 is very underpowered. What you do is you point the nose towards the ground, gain the airspeed required to do the loop, then pull up into the loop. The airflow is relative to the actual wing angle. So when you're at the 90 degrees, you're still flying. Yeah, as long as you've got enough speed to get over the top, you'll complete the loop.
Oh, really?
And you gain that speed by diving downwards.
Oh, I see. Oh,
yeah?
I
does that
see.
Make sense?
Yeah, no, it does, yeah.
Yeah.
And now, you have an acrobatics license.
No, I'm English. I have an aerobatics rating on my license.
Aerobatics, sorry. Not
yes, acrobatics is American.
Is it?
The problem with it is, when you get to the weight, when you come out the other end, over the top, down through 90 degrees, you're going to be building up airspeed extremely fast.
Yes.
And as you're pulling through the last quarter, the vertical to back to level again, you put so much stress on the aeroplane, you will probably overstress it and the wings will break off. But it would be possible with the right pilot.
Can I give you a round of applause? I did not think this one was going to turn out to be a can of worms, Martin. I really didn't. And
I get a round of applause. That's brilliant. Thank you.
The few people have been in touch to say they've seen A480s do loop the loops at air shows.
Yeah.
But
there is the really famous bit of video on YouTube of the guy in the 707 when he did the demonstration flight of actually barrel rolling it.
Yeah. So it can be done. But don't try it at home.
Any plane can be aerobatic. It's just some will break before others.
Round of applause. Yeah, it's fine. Just some of them will break. Mate, you're several thousand feet in the air. You should be so casual about the prospect of things breaking. It's coming up to 12:45. I've got room for a couple more. We've done the seatbelts. Watershed, I thought we'd nail. Ketchup, I've solved. But I don't know if it's a technically definitive answer to the question. But when I tell you what it is, you're just going to go like this. Oh.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
12:48 is the time. You're listening to Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. And I have got a few questions for you, mostly about Watershed and ketchup. I think we've covered everything else. Neil's in Doncaster. Hello, Neil.
Hiya, James.
Question or answer?
Answer on the Watershed question.
Carry on.
Basically, a watershed's an area of high ground above a river system that drains into the river.
It sheds water.
Yeah, so it can be a massive area. So if you get a sudden heavy downpour, there's a lot of water draining into the river and you get a point at which the river inundates, so you get a flood. So it's a tipping point. And in terms of television, it's a point at which you can have a bloody good swear afterwards.
Steady on, because it's not after the watershed yet. And that's just allowed. But don't go near Ava's list of vile words. I don't want to hear any of that malarkey. Qualifications?
Vaguely remembered from 30 years ago GCSE geography.
30 years ago GCSE. So you did them in 89?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, 90. Same age as you, 47.
Yeah, but I did O-levels. I did six a year early. I think you did them in 89, not 90.
88, actually.
No, 88 was O-levels. 88 was GCSEs. We did them in 88, and I did a bunch early in 87. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Mine was the first year for the national GCSE exam.
Do you know what I used to do a public speaking turn. I used to call GCSE the greatest con since 11 plus. Do you see what I did there, Neil?
Oh, very good, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Jacob would love you.
He would, wouldn't he? We're going back a while on this. Round of applause for Neil. Nicely done. Who'd have thought that geography GCSE would come in useful one day? Happy days.
Some of
you was dead. Yeah, well, just wait. Someone might ask you about Oxbow Lakes later. Dale's in Nottingham. Dale, question or answer?
It's a question.
Carry on.
What is a donkey's year?
It's an indeterminate length, isn't it?
Yeah. So I mean, we could be talking about Brexit for donkey's years. So I just want to know, what is a donkey's year?
We could. It's indeterminate length. So the question really becomes, where does it come from?
Yeah. Where does it come from? Yeah.
And I think the answer is simply that donkeys live for ages.
Do they?
Yeah. They live to be about 60. There's one famous donkey in Blackpool who lived to be even older than 60, maybe 70 or 80. Not 80, 80 would be silly. But donkeys live a really long time, a surprisingly long time.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes?
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
Mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cash back given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
So that's why donkey's years means ages.
But why is it not then sort of whales' years? I'm sure they live a long time.
Ask me, mate. I don't make the rules. I just explain the whole. I just answer the questions. Donkey's years means a very long time because donkeys live for ages compared to other quadrupeds.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Round of applause for me. I haven't had one today. That's close. Run it. We're going to knock them all off the board and still have 4 minutes left. Maybe looking at Stewart's inquiry on the watershed, judging by my text and tweets. But I felt that Neil in Doncaster was very, very persuasive and convincing, perhaps even authoritative. Edward is in Bexham. Edward, question or answer?
Well, hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I have an answer for the ketchup question.
Oh, marvellous. Carry on. No, I think you need to come down from that tree. And then we might be able to hear you. 0345 606 0973 is the number that you need. Stav is in Hampstead Heath. Chiarite.
Hello, James.
Question or answer?
It's a steward's inquiry.
What?
To the watershed.
No. Is it?
Okay.
What did you tell the producer?
My understanding...
No.
Excuse me.
Okay, carry on.
My understanding from my school days, the watershed was the point between two water systems. That's the... shared moment. That's the point.
In layman's terms, you might have said the same thing.
If you've got a mountain and you've got a point, one side of the mountain is shedding to one side, and once you cross the point, the watershed, then you're going on to the other side where the other catchment area occurs.
I'm still not seeing it. I'm just being a bit thick. So to use phrase. So no, I've not got it. Sorry. Try again.
Okay, so if you've got a river system that has a catchment area...
That you've lost me already. What's a catchment area in a river system?
So the Amazon River...
Yeah.
All the water that feeds the Amazon River comes from...
The catchment area. Oh, okay, got you. Yes, okay. Yes. So, okay, I'm in the river.
The point which the next river starts catching water, there's a very fine point at the top of that mountain range.
Oh, so here are a couple of streams. One feeds into the Amazon, the other feeds into the Zambezi. Don't at me, all right? I'm just randomly picking rivers. The watershed would be the midpoint between the two catchment areas.
The drop of water will either drop into the one or the other, and if it goes on to the point between the two, that's exactly the watershed.
I don't think that works as the reason why they'd call the TV you're allowed to say rude words after it, though, as well as the other answer.
I'm not sure about that particular point, but I do remember the watershed being that specific line at the top
of
the mountain.
Oh, no, it does. So, yes, because it's dividing two things. So it's a watershed on one side that way, on the other side this way.
Exactly.
Right, I'm giving you a round of applause, but I'm not withdrawing anybody else's because I'm feeling very at one with the universe today.
Very kind. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Stav, round of applause. Look at that. Look at that. Mark's in Brixton. Mark, question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Carry on, Mark.
The donkey's years.
Yeah.
It's not actually donkey's years. It's a rhyming slang. It's donkey's ears. Is years.
I nearly went for that, but it doesn't.
It's actually a It's a rhyming slang, mate. So when people say donkey's years, you're actually giving away the rhyming slang.
So it's donkey's ears, years.
A donkey's ears is rhymes with years. So when you say I've been doing donkeys. This for donkeys, it's donkey's ears, years.
Just needs a very long time. There's
no such thing as donkey's years as such. It's...
I prefer your answer to mine. I don't know quite. I mean, we must have done this before, and I filed away the answer that I used. But no, it's.
But yeah.
I prefer yours, donkeys. But do people say donkeys though?
Yeah. I use it.
What are your qualifications?
I was a London boy.
You are.
Been around rhyming slang.
Were you born donkeys? Were you born within the sounds of Bow Bells, Mark?
Not really. I was born in Brixton, still live in Brixton, but it's close. It's close enough. If you live on the south, you don't have to be an East Ender to be a Cockney. That's another fallacy as well.
I've got enough problems with Brexit. I don't want to start this war live on the radio at 12:55 on a Thursday.
You can hear Bow Bells from the South Bank. So it's all this stuff about East End. And,
it's all kicking off now. I'll pass them. I'll send them your way, Mark. We get any moody geezers turning up at the studio.
Yeah, so remember, it's this. When you say it's donkey's ears, rhymes with years.
I'm going to give you a round.
You can't actually say donkey's years.
You're not supposed to add it, because that gives away the rhyme. It only works if it doesn't rhyme. So really, then. So if you're going up the apples and pears, you should never say pears. You should just say up the apples.
Well, yeah, generally you do. But even apples and pears to someone that don't know is still confusing.
Yeah, but years and ears, years. I mean, you're actually saying the actual word.
Exactly. So donkey's ears is
a complete bolderization of the rhyme. You never say flute. You just say whistle. Nice whistle, son.
Yeah.
I used to do that when I was in menswear, Mark. I'd often say, "Lovely whistle, sir."
Amongst other things, I'm sure, John.
Amongst other things as well. Round of applause for Mark. I like that a lot.
Thank you very much.
Do you know the word television is fascinating for one reason, and that reason is it has a double root. So telos is Greek and video is Latin, very few words. It's not unique. But then you get sort of Harry Potter-style enthusiasms where they come up with Latinate versions of words that are very modern. I would like to know whether or not anyone is putting in the heavy lifting on finding rhyming slang for modern stuff. Like, is there, for example, rhyming slang for Instagram or rhyming slang for a mobile phone or rhyming slang for Netflix? All these modern innovations and phenomena deserve to have their own rhyming slang. What's the most modern thing that you can think of? Bitcoin. Is there a rhyming slang for Bitcoin? Don't go there. That's rude. But do you see what I mean? No one's doing it. No one's doing the heritage. It's going to be a dead art soon, the art of rhyming slang, unless someone steps up to the plate. Tim's in Oxford. Question or answer, Tim?
Answer.
Carry on.
Ketchup. It's actually, the question was flawed. They're asking if it goes from a liquid to a food. It shouldn't be that. It should be liquid to a dry food or a food to a drink. It's actually, the question is incorrect.
I may have ruined the question by you doing my usual annoying interruptions and burblings. The question really was, is ketchup a food or a drink?
It's a food, because you get sustenance from it, and you don't get any, how do you satiate your thirst? You don't quench your thirst from it.
You don't. Yeah, same with soup, I suppose. I was going to go for sandwiches as being the key here, because you could put ketchup, you can never put a liquid in a sandwich, could you?
No.
You
can put a liquid in a sandwich, you can't put a drink in a sandwich.
What liquid would you put in a sandwich?
A very viscous liquid, like Marmite.
I should have said drink. You wouldn't put a drink in a sandwich.
You wouldn't put a drink in a sandwich, no.
But you would put ketchup in a sandwich. In fact, some would say you can't have a bacon sandwich without ketchup.
Correct.
Brown sauce. No, brown for sausages. Actually, I have brown on both. I have brown on both.
Yeah, exactly.
Qualifications, Tim? Qualifications?
I own a cafe in North Oxfordshire.
Do you? How delightful.
I do, yeah.
Round of applause for you. You can put it on the wall. How delightful. And that's it for another day. Another mystery hour is out of the way. We'll do it all again next Thursday from 12, probably. We'll certainly be doing it all again tomorrow morning from 10. It's 12:59. Here's Sheila Fogarty.